Stanley, this is New Hampshire Public Radio News. It's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The North Country economy is the focus of a special series by Business NH Magazine this summer called Tearing Away from Its Paper Past. Part of this storyline will be familiar already to many Granite Staters, how northern New Hampshire has struggled to regain its economic footing after the decline of its once robust paper and pulp industry, how those well-paying, steady mill jobs have been hard to replace, and how young people continue to leave the region in search of better opportunities. But the newer tale that these articles tell is about where the growth and excitement are now in the North Country. Reporter Erica Cohen looks at new job sources, large and small, from major employers like the reopened Gorham Paper Mill and the Federal Prison, to little shops and restaurants on main streets, to hopes for more future employment at Berlin's biomass plant, for example, or the region's brand new 700-mile ATV trail. But as her reports also make clear, there are extra challenges for some of these businesses. Poor roads, an aging workforce, and in some spots, still slow internet access, all begging the question, what is the best direction for this region to take? Today in The Exchange, tearing away from its paper past and reinventing the North Country's future, let's hear from you. If you're in the region, how would you rate its economic health? If the North Country is no longer a mill region, then what kind of a region should it be? High tech? A tourist mecca focused on the two new prisons? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email if you'd like. Keep them short, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And Erica Cohen is here, Associate Editor of Business NH Magazine, the author of the series I mentioned titled The North Country, Tearing Away from Its Paper Past. And Erica, it's really nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
You're welcome. I'm glad to be here.
Also with us is Edith Tucker, reporter for the Coos County Democrat and the Berlin Reporter, both owned by Salmon Press. And Edith, a big welcome back. Thanks for your time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Eric, I'll start with you since we got this idea from your series. What's the big picture that you hope your readers walk away with from reading these reports?
Well, the reason we did this story was that the North Country is the largest geographical area in the state. It has a lot of economic development needs, which is what everyone focuses on, but it also has a lot of economic development opportunities and many positive developments people aren't aware of. So we thought it was important to share that with people, so that they would understand why they need to pay more attention and we need investment, because what happens in the North Country will affect the whole state and make it better.
Now, that's interesting what you said, pay attention. Do you feel like most people south of the White Mountains don't pay much attention?
The people in the North Country definitely feel like they don't get attention, except when it's something negative.
Yeah,
and they
closes.
Feel like there's a lot of needs they have that could be met quicker and could help them develop.
What's the takeaway for you, Erica, after spending so much time and talking to so many people?
What struck me most about my visit to the North Country is just the loyalty of these people to the place they live. They want the North Country to be successful and will work so hard at it. But sometimes the things they're missing are things out of their control. They're missing a railroad that isn't upgraded enough. They're missing broadband that they need to connect with their businesses, things that they can't make happen, but that they really want the help to make happen.
Yeah, and we'll talk a lot about infrastructure, I'm sure. I want to hear from you too, Edith. I know you and I have talked a lot about the North Country working on an economic makeover. How would you say it's going at this point? I mean, this is not a new story in a way. People have been talking about this for a long time.
Well, I think that it's slow. It's partly because the whole nation has struggled with an economy that's, you know, not as robust as people would like it to be. There's a shift everywhere in what's happening. It just seems that here it's more difficult. It's further away from the center of the action in the southern part of the state. There are a tremendous number of loyal people who live here, very hardworking, good work ethic, but it seems distant from the markets of Boston and that area.
So you're saying, you know, as the nation recovers slowly, it's coming even more slowly in the North Country because of some of these infrastructure issues and the remoteness issues? Is that what you're saying, Edith?
Yes, I think that's so.
So
yeah,
the type
I think we have to put it in a national context.
Yeah. and not just say boohoo the North Country. Lots of areas of the country have been slowly recovering. You know, the title of Erica's series, and I love it, Erica, is Tearing Away from Its Paper Past. And we will be focusing mostly on the future this hour. But Edith, I wonder if you could just remind us of what that paper past looked like, how big it was, how important it was.
It was very, very big, and it began to become smaller really after World War II. So it declined over time. But people kept thinking that this or that new investor, new owner would make a difference. So we lost the mills in Groveton, which were two, the Wausau Paper Mill and Groveton Paper Board. Those buildings are mostly being ripped down even as we speak now. You can almost hear the bricks hitting the ground. And it's sad, but it's a chance for some new businesses to invest there. The Berlin-Gorham area had a big pulp mill, had also a paper mill, which is still running with a new owner and a new machine, a new paper machine that came into town about a year ago. So it's still there, but it's greatly reduced in the number of employees that it used to have. And 200 people plus at Cascades Paper Mill is really the remnant of the actual mill culture that was so prominent here.
What does that mean, Edith? This may sound really obvious, but what does that mean, mill culture?
Well, there were jobs that had long shifts, 10 and 12-hour shifts. People expected to go to work at the mill, very many of them, directly from high school. And they had strong unions. They had good wages. They had good benefits. And as long as you did your job, you were able to keep that job for your entire lifetime. So it's a different part of New England culture, which has changed all over New England and stayed here longer than in many places. But Lowell, Brockton, Manchester, Nashua, most cities in New England had the same experience. It just came here very, very late.
How does that mill mentality that some have talked about and that you're touching on, Edith, translate into a newer economy, the economy of today?
Well, I think it's very hard for someone who spent a lifetime learning skills on the job, who don't have the credentials that are so typical of people looking for work today, of a college degree, perhaps a graduate degree. These are mostly people who learned on the job, and they did a particular job very well. It did change, but, you know, as computers came in and so forth. But people didn't expect to have to be nimble in acquiring skills quickly.
Can you talk about that too, Erica, that transfer of skills, of mentality, you know, especially if you're in your 40s, 50s, 60s, there may not be another type of job for you in the North Country.
And that actually was what I came upon. So to put it in perspective, what multiple people told me is if you take all the mill closures of the main, you're talking about 4,000 jobs, jobs that paid on average about $22 an hour. That's about twice the average salary in the county. And the kind of traditional story you'd hear would be something that Mike Currier told me at Rotobeck. He worked in the Groveton Mills for 30 years, and he started by walking into the mill when he was a teenager and saying, if you don't hire me, I have to leave the county. And the hiring manager turns to him and says, you start at the 3 to 11 shift. He eventually made his way up to superintendent of maintenance. And then when the mill closed, he needed a new job. Well, luckily for him, he had skills Rotobeck could use. But then he has all these people he knows in those mills coming to him when Rotobeck is starting to grow now, and he can't hire them because they don't have those skills.
What is Rotobeck?
So Rotobeck makes grappler hooks. They're a manufacturer. They're a Canadian company, and Canadian business is huge up there. And his story is very representative of the region because it's saying there are these people with skills. They'd love to work, but if all you did was cut paper every day, that skill doesn't work for him. And he says every time a job opening comes, he finds that same problem. So that, to me, was the big problem, the big challenge of people up there. They were these very devoted workers with very untransferable skills.
So what do they do? What are they doing now?
Some of them have gone to low-wage jobs. Some of them have left. When the mills closed 2 years ago, the last, when the Gorham mill closed before it reopened, a lot of them sat on unemployment and waited because they could do about as well as unemployment as they could at a low-wage job. Some of them are finding new jobs. There are some really, really bright spots in that region. One person I talked to that was really inspiring was Rick Tillotson of the Tillotson family. He's 65. He didn't start Tillotson Performance Polymers to get rich. He started Tillotson Performance Polymers to create jobs. And he purposely hired 10 people in Colebrook that were unemployed, people that needed jobs. To those 10 people, those jobs were everything. But I actually start my second part of the story in that, because those 10 jobs in Colebrook accounted for almost 1% of Colebrook's employment, which just tells you how significant 10 jobs are.
It matters.
And in
right.
the southern part of the state, that would be, 10 jobs.
Right. Edith, can you jump in there? It's really interesting what Erica is saying. You know, despite everybody wanting to hire folks, especially the ones who got laid off, it's hard.
It is very hard. And some people have found employment. People who have general maintenance skills seem to have done well, as Erica points out. People have gone to work for Androscoggin Valley Hospital. They've gone to work for Weeks Medical Center. Some of those people who have more general skills and were in middle management or above were quite employable. But it is very difficult, and it often is that people who have worked on a mill where their hands-on skills are the most important have trouble transferring into the hospitality business, where your people skills, your welcoming abilities, your abilities to talk and serve behind the front desk, registering people, those are the more important skills than the actual physical hands-on skills. So it's hard to make that transfer.
Well, our phone number here in the exchange for you to join our conversation is 1-800-892-6477. And today in the exchange, we're talking about the North Country in the midst of an economic makeover, focusing on a two-part series by Business NH Magazine this summer called The North Country, Tearing Away from Its Paper Past. We'd love your thoughts, questions, comments after a super short break. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange on NHPR. It's 919. Good morning. I'm David Darman. NHPR reaches listeners all over New Hampshire. If you own or operate a business, you can get your message to the entire state by simply becoming an NHPR underwriter. Visit the support page at nhpr.org to find out more about our many underwriting opportunities. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and from Monadnock Music, presenting string quintets by Dowland, Schubert, and Parker with cellist Rhonda Ryder and the Monadnock Quartet on Saturday, August 17th at 7:30 in the evening at the Peterborough Townhouse, monadnockmusic.org. And the NEEF Network Organizations, a statewide leader assisting students and parents planning for college. Information at nhheaf.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the reinvention of the North Country, where the growth and excitement are today as the region tears away from its paper past. We invite you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. If you're in the region, how would you rate its economic health? And if the North Country is no longer a mill region, then what kind of a region should it be? What would you like to see? Join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. Our guests are Edith Tucker, reporter for the Coos County Democrat, and the Berlin Reporter, both owned by Salmon Press, and Erica Cohen, associate editor of Business NH Magazine. She's the author of a two-part series this summer on the North Country. And both of you, let's go to our callers now. And Quinn's calling from Keene. Hi, Quinn, you're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
Yeah, I wanted to just touch base on, in listening to this, it reminds me of the transformation that the Coos County has undergone. Certainly, I grew up in the area and saw parts of it in the late 90s with the mills finally closing down. But I think it's important to remember that what I still see in visiting frequently, at least a couple times a month, is that people still want to be there. I think what differentiates it from maybe other dilapidated areas is that the people welcome you back. They're friendly people. It's a beautiful, beautiful location. And I really do think there's an uptick with the biomass plant, with American Tissue, with the ATV park, as well as the snowmobile frequenters up there. I think there is a positive uptick, and my father still runs his business up there. And
what's
brother,
his business, Quinn?
His business is White Mountain Lumber.
Okay. Yeah. So, and I think Edith Tucker had wanted to talk about wood is still important. Paper and pulp may not be as big as they were once, but wood is still important. Couple points coming out of your call, Quinn. Thank you so much. And to you first, I think, Erica, you wrote about this too. You know, yes, the North Country has challenges, infrastructure and an aging workforce and skills transfer and so forth. But one of the positives you write about is people really want to be there.
They do. And one great example of that is Dave Presby of Presby Environmental. He's got over 100 employees between his four businesses. He gets approached all the time. He builds and develops septic systems that he installs. He's installed over 200,000 of them worldwide. He gets approached all the time from people in other states and countries. Move here, you know, we'll give you these incentives. He stays because he loves the North Country and he loves his workers. He could potentially make more somewhere else, but he's doing well where he is and he's not going, which is great for his 100 employees.
Right, right. And Edith, you know, another thing that I like about Quinn's call is he says he does see a positive uptick. And he mentioned a couple things that we should talk about. First of all, the biomass plant in Berlin. Just remind us what's going on there, Edith.
Well, what's going on there is that they're moving into commissioning the new plant. They took an old boiler that was in existence, a Babcock and Wilcox facility, and as it happened, that company got the contract to change this whole thing over into a 75-megawatt electricity-producing plant that will burn wood chips. And it's those wood chips, some 700,000 tons of wood chips, that will create large number of jobs of people going back into the woods, getting back into a rotation of managed forestry and cutting, and it gives a market for that low-grade wood.
And when
so
is this
only
coming,
about
Edith?
40
yeah.
people, what?
When is this coming? I've heard a lot about it.
The they expect to have it open by year's end.
Wow,
this
okay.
year. So they are beginning the commissioning process, which means starting to test out different facets of the mill. But it looks almost completed now. It's really quite an extraordinary. I like industry. I love seeing the stack. And it keeps Berlin in the wood business and will keep our forests, we all hope, open to both wood cutting under managed care as well as the whole recreation that goes with having open woods, and which ties back into the ATVs and the snowmobiles.
Yeah,
so that's why I say the tree industry, the timber industry, still a vital, vital part of Coos County.
I want to ask you about that, and pardon me for interrupting you there, Edith, about the recreation, and Quinn mentioned the ATV trail. I remember talking a couple years ago, I think with you, Edith, about the new ATV park. Now there's a 700-mile, brand-new, just-opened-up ATV trail. I think it's called Ride the Wilds. Wow.
Ride the Wilds, yes. The clubs all got together, which in itself is quite remarkable because it is a very large county. So just to get the different clubs sitting down at the same table. And they have worked out what ultimately they expect to be a 1,000-mile connected trail around in a huge loop through Coos County that will connect up to Canada and Vermont, Maine, and presumably into counties south of Coos.
Go ahead, Erica.
And
yeah.
So I was going to, what you were saying, Edith, about the biomass plant is actually really important because when I visited the biomass plant, they put it in great perspective for me. They said that once it's up and running, they'll be getting 100 truckloads of wood a day, which is about mm-hmm. half of what was coming in when all the plants were up and running. But that's a half more than they have now. And to explain kind of how much that means to the people up there, Carl Belanger, as the site manager there, was telling me that when that plant went down, they just started seeing trucks sitting on the side of the road, kind of just left there, either with signs saying for sale or just abandoned because the people couldn't afford to keep them up. And now he's getting calls every day. When can we start bringing wood? So 100 truckloads of wood will start coming in, and that's going to be a huge economic boost.
Part of that positive uptick.
Very positive.
Quinn, our caller, talked about. All right, Quinn, thanks a lot for joining us. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email us, exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page. Again, today in The Exchange, we're looking at where the growth and excitement are in the North Country today. Many see the region in the midst of an economic makeover. We're finding out more about that, and we'd love to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. I want to bring another voice into our conversation, Erica and Edith. Joining us now on the phone is Eleanor Jaffe. She's a research associate at UNH's Carsey Institute. She's been following the Coos County High School class of 2009. Eleanor, good to have you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
What's the main goal of this project, following the Coos County High School class of 2009? It's interesting.
That's right. Well, actually, we have two cohorts, the class of 2009 and the class of 2013. The class of 2009 is now about 22 years old, so they're really at the point where they're starting to make decisions about where they'll live and work. But the point of the survey overall is to follow their decision-making around where they'll live and work, what kind of fields they'll be going into, and so forth. It's also a multidisciplinary team, so there's a lot of information coming out of the study.
Well, and where they'll live is a key question, right? Because the North Country wants young people to stay there. Not everyone, but more than stay now. What are you finding out at this point from this group of young adults? How many of them, just roughly, Eleanor, are deciding to stay in the North Country?
As of our latest data, which is from this spring, we're still in analysis of this data, 55% have left and 45% have stayed.
Okay, that's not too bad, is it?
It's not too bad. I think one of the questions is, for those that left, will they return at some point? There's demographic research from similar non-metropolitan areas that shows it's very common for people in this age group to leave the area they're from to pursue opportunities, but often they'll come back in their late 20s or early 30s. The question is, will that happen in Coos, given that they've sort of grown up with this idea that they won't be able to pursue those opportunities locally in the future? One of our surveys from 2008 of adults, this is a separate Carsey survey, found that 75% of adults would advise a young person to move elsewhere. We've also seen that 16% of our participants have seen a parent lose a job in the last year. So they're getting a lot of messaging telling them they need to leave to attain their goals. So whether or not we'll see that sort of typical trend of them coming back is uncertain right now.
Wow, that's really interesting. So they have grown up with a different attitude about the benefits of staying, radically different, I would guess, right, Eleanor, from what their parents grew up with or their grandparents?
That's right. They're encouraged to leave, and we see in what they're saying that they've really taken that to heart, because at this point, 60% see the job situation in Coos as getting worse. That's down from 65% 2 years ago, but it's still rather high. So I think there'll be a real challenge here, is even once these industries get up and running, the industries that you've been talking about on the show, there'll be a challenge and an opportunity for the leadership in Coos to get the word out that things are changing, because they'll have to reverse these years of messaging that young people have heard.
Wow. So for those who want to come back to Coos, or who do decide to stay in the North Country, what's helping them decide to stay or to return?
Well, there are kind of two different things going on there. For the ones that have stayed, they overwhelmingly say family and community. And like we've heard on the show, there's a lot of loyalty. There's a lot of social connectedness, and they value that a great deal. Those that left value it, and those that stay, about 90% place high or moderate importance on staying near family. So that's important to both groups, but the ones that stayed put that first. The ones that left, It's really all about jobs and educational opportunities.
All right. Well, Eleanor, thank you very much. Very interesting.
Thank you.
Eleanor Jaffe, Research Associate at UNH's Carsey Institute. Again, she's been following Coos County High School classes of 2009 and, as we heard, 2013 as they prepare to enter adulthood. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us on The Exchange. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. Wow, Erica Cohen, that was really interesting to hear from Eleanor. I wonder what you heard about young people and the messages they've been getting from their parents, who would probably like them to stay, but their parents are saying, don't do it.
I actually did talk a lot about that very fact and people leaving and the problem that creates. One of the most telling stories that I was thinking of it when Eleanor was talking was when Willis Blevins was giving me a tour of Gorham Paper. He was explaining to me how there was a time when this was the job everyone wanted to get. Well, the average age in the paper mill is now 58, and they're going to need new blood, and they're not sure where it's going to come from, because what these kids have grown up hearing is, I got my job, I lost my job, I got my job. My dad lost his hand in the mill. My mother was on workers' compensation from the mill. So they're running from the mill as fast as they can, whereas there are good jobs in the mills, and the mills are a lot safer than they used to be.
Sure.
They hear a lot of folklore, too.
It's not your father's manufacturing.
Exactly. But they're really worried about where that next generation, and it's ironic given that the paper mills were once where everyone wanted to be, and now they're worried that they don't know where their next workers are going to be.
Yeah. Edith Tucker, I love your thoughts, too, on what we heard from Eleanor Jaffe at UNH.
Well, I think that that people are stepping up and taking a leadership position. This last week, I interviewed John Judge, who's the CEO, president of the Appalachian Mountain Club. And it turns out that the Appalachian Mountain Club has 492 seasonal, part-time, and full-time employees in New Hampshire, and that about 420 of those are in Coos County. So they've started an internship program. They're working with youngsters in the schools to have them see that with education, recreation jobs, recreational opportunities do lead to jobs that are year-round, that have benefits. And instead of seeing sort of that side of tourism as sort of an afterthought, that those actually do have careers. The Omni Mount Washington, which employs over 1,000 people in the winter, about 500 in the summer, they too are trying to encourage people who are local to have jobs that have, you know, a ladder upward in the hospitality industry. The Mountain View Grand has a program with White Mountains Regional High School. White Mountains Community College has started a hospitality major. So there are people who see that these are jobs that are good jobs if you have the training, the certificates that go along with making them better jobs than just casual jobs,
yeah, and
seasonal jobs.
In about 5 minutes, we'll be talking with Kathy Anagus at White Mountains Community College, since you mentioned that, Edith. And you did mention some of those big tourism attractions that, you know, people love, and they've been there for years, and they're lovely. The Balsams, though, Edith, been shuttered for, what, a year or two now? That's got to be a blow to that region.
The Colebrook area, it is good that Rick Tillotson is there and other people in Colebrook making every effort to turn things around. That still is a tough place at the moment between the Ethan Allen mill almost closing across the river in Beecher Falls, Vermont, the closing of the Balsams. It's been very, very tough up there. That's why the ATVing and snowmobiling seems so particularly important in that area. And where the people who live in those areas, with or without certificates and degrees, really banded together to try to turn things around themselves. That's what the trail making is about. It's a local grassroots effort saying, you know, we can't necessarily count on large corporations or the government to come and solve our problems. We're going to have to do it ourselves.
The phone number I'm sorry, Edith. Go ahead.
So that's an aspect to the turnaround and makeover is, rather than waiting for someone else to do it, people are galvanizing and trying to do some of the work themselves.
And don't wait for someone else to join our conversation. You can call now. 1-800-892-6477 is the number to join us. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Eric and Edith, I've got a couple emails I'd like to share with you. This is from Katie Payne. She says there is a huge opportunity to attract smart people who can work online and create good businesses. The problem is that we have to get the smart people up there. The outdoor life is great, but the shopping and schools are so awful, it is hard to attract and keep people. The local population provides great workers who want to stay in the area, but the region has a long way to go before it has the adequate high-tech skill necessary for businesses to grow. Katie says the investment needs to be made at the high school level to teach science, math, and technology. If it is to become a destination for the next generation of businesses, I wonder whether the local government has the will to make that investment. And boy, that whole talk about science and technology at the high school level, Erica, isn't just going on in the North Country. It's happening statewide. But what do you think about Katie's email?
Well, attracting people with the skills for high jobs is a big priority up there, and one that that area is really struggling with. Some areas have done well at it. Littleton, I think, may be going against the trend Katie's seeing, because Littleton just got, in the last year and a half, a brand new IT company that has been growing. But Littleton has 4 highway exits, so they can get those people. Whereas Berlin, Colebrook, Lancaster, I mean, unfortunately, the statistics are working against the North Country. One of the things we found in our research was that while 33% of New Hampshire residents have a bachelor's degree or higher, in the North Country, that's 16.4%.
Oh, wow, that's a lot less.
Yes, it does. But if you're someone that has one of those degrees and you're looking at your opportunities, either you're not aware there is one up there, or you'll pursue one that's frankly more profitable elsewhere because the average salaries up there are a lot lower.
Did you find people complaining about the shopping and the schools when you were doing your reporting?
I didn't hear anything about shopping, because now that Littleton has 4 highway exits and a number of things with a number of big box stores, people go there. What people told me about the schools was more at the community college level, which is that the community college has been growing to meet needs. But I didn't hear a lot from people about the high schools.
All right. And I've got another email I want to share with you, but we're heading into a short break, so I'll save it for that. We're also going to talk more about the role of education after a super short break. And we'll take a lot more of your emails and calls. So here's the email address, exchange@nhpr.org, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. We'll be right back.
This is The Exchange on NHPR. It's 9:39. Good morning.
On the next Ian Rehm Show, an update on the state of emergency in Egypt. Then, Grammy Award-winning musician Ricky Skaggs. This is all coming up on the Ian Rehm Show.
The Ian Rehm Show, this morning from 10 until noon on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and from the Groponi Automotive Group, featuring multiple lines of fuel-efficient, environmentally friendly cars, serving the greater Concord area since 1924, online at groponi.com. And Prescott Park Arts Festival, presenting Annie in Prescott Park and Dan Brown live on the Fairpoint Communications main stage, open to the public, prescottpark.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. Email us your thoughts on the stories of the week that caught your attention. exchange@nhpr.org is the address. And then join us tomorrow morning, live at 9. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at the North Country economy and its future. And you can join us at 1-800-892-6477. How would you rate the North Country's economic health? And if the North Country is no longer a mill region, then what kind of region should it be? What would you like to see? Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Our guests are Edith Tucker, reporter for the Coos County Democrat, and the Berlin Reporter, both owned by Salmon Press, and Erica Cohen, associate editor of Business NH Magazine and the author of a two-part series this summer titled The North Country, Tearing Away from Its Paper Past. And both of you, just before the break, we were talking about the importance of education and some of the problems surrounding it. And joining us now on the phone is Kathy Enegas, president of White Mountains Community College. And this is right up your alley, Kathy, isn't it?
Yes, good morning, Laurie. Yes, it is.
Good to talk to you.
We work very hard.
I know you do. Give us a profile, Kathy, if you could, please, of your typical student at White Mountains Community College.
Well, not unlike what you have heard from Erica and Edith, our student is a little bit older than just someone coming directly out of high school, although we are gaining many students from the local region now choosing the community college because we are much more affordable, as well as they have discovered us. We are not the old tech anymore. So you were talking earlier about changing the message. That has been much of our work in the recent past, changing the message and helping people understand the opportunity at the community college.
So there's an image issue going on.
There is an image issue. Community colleges are kind of perceived as a junior college, and frankly, our faculty is as well qualified as any other faculty, and many, many students now choose to come to us to transfer. So we have agreements across the board. We work heavily in the STEM fields that have become in the public domain. Those are the jobs of the future.
STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. Yeah.
That is correct. Yes. So we have a heavy focus on health sciences as well. We have human services. We work very closely with the businesses in the region trying to help them fill the skills gap. And as you spoke earlier in the show, not only do we have to work very closely with those businesses, but we are also working with them to plan for their future.
Well, and so, Kathy, if I could ask you, what are you hearing from your graduates about how their job hunts are going, especially those who want to stay in the region?
Well, all of our technical programs require an internship as part of their programming. So many of our students find their job while they're interning. So that internship is not only a requirement, but it also allows companies to see what their skills are. So it's not just in your typical nursing program that, yes, you have your clinical part, and that is a requirement. That clinical part is your internship. So once you pass your board, then you get hired. In, say, our mobile equipment technology program, an internship is required. We have a partnership with Caterpillar. Many of our students then go to work for Caterpillar or in our tractor-trailer program. They get their CDL or they come back for some program that gives them a technical skill.
Kathy, if I could ask you one last question. I think your phone's breaking up a little there.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. It's not your fault. Edith Tucker mentioned earlier that you folks have a new program in hospitality management. Makes me wonder, Kathy, if you could add another program to your lineup that you don't have now, given what you're hearing from area employers. Boy, we'd really love to add this program. What would that be?
Well, we're currently working with the AMC on an outdoor education certificate.
Wow, that's interesting.
And it will be up and running within a year, and that because, as you know, AMC is a very large employer. So the hospitality program is up and running. We also have a new certificate that is probably a well-kept secret in cybersecurity and healthcare information technology. This is a huge area of interest, and this is our first year certificate in this, and that area continues to grow. So every year we continue to add certificates that are directly tied to the local economy.
Wow, real interesting. Kathy, thank you very much for joining us.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Kathy Enegas, president of White Mountains Community College. The number for you to join us here in the Exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. NHPR.org. And Erica and Edith, I want to go back to our callers and also share some of these emails with you that I've got. Here's one that came in from Mamie. She says, as a young adult from Gorham with a grandfather who was a train engineer for the mill, I would love to hear you discuss the high income level of the mill workers and their transition to unemployment. Mamie says, I recently moved from this area to the southern end of the state where I knew my marketing career would progress. My heart will always be in this area. Edith, gets a little bit to what we talked about before, both how hard it was to go from people from high income jobs to unemployment or lower income jobs. But also, I love what she says about my heart's always in this area. What do you think, Edith?
We hear that a lot. And, you know, 100 or more years ago, that was the old home sort of project to get people to come back to their hometowns after they'd left. It would be nice if not only their heart was in the North Country, but that they could send, you know, really have a planned way of sending business our way or making connections or helping people who are up here and staying to connect with bankers or investors or people who would be helpful in the southern part of the state. I think we need more sort of planned connection across the notch. And it having your heart here is great, but it doesn't put food on the table for people who don't have jobs.
Now, what do you mean by that, planned connection across the notch?
Well, you know, you aren't going to find jobs by staying in Coos County and looking around for somebody to bring them. You have to have connections into the investment community in Massachusetts, in Manchester, or Nashua. You know, people who have the ability to make the connections, the kind of thing that Abino Lamontagne does for the state as an employee. But that can also be done by people of goodwill who know the people who can make things happen.
And
we need to have a more organized way to sort of make those things happen.
Go ahead, Erica.
One thing that we haven't talked about yet this morning that has been going on when you mentioned Bino is the Canadian connection.
Yes, I wanted to ask you about that.
The state has been working very hard to attract Canadian companies because for them, the North Country is everything they want. It's close to their other headquarters. It has a better tax situation than Canada, and it gets them into the American market. And when I spoke to Bino for this story, he was telling me he spends 25% of his job speaking French. Mm-hmm. That's how important that is. And I can, you know, I spoke to at least three French companies. Rotobec, which I mentioned earlier, was a French company. Keops up in Colebrook is a French company. There are a number of French companies up there that are really pulling up that economy and have a chance to pull it up even more. In fact, Rick Tillotson's partner is at a French company. And that French connection will be a key to them moving forward because those are people that are right over the border and see Coos County as a perfect place to put their business.
Yeah, it's interesting. We often look at how hard it is to get down to, you know, the financial centers of Manchester and Nashua or the government centers of Concord. But you're right. There's another connection going north from the North Country, Erica.
And for them, it's, you know, between a half hour and a 2 hour drive to their Canadian headquarters. So
let's take another call. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Betsy's waiting in Franconia. Hi, Betsy. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Seems to me that there's an elephant in the room here that's not being discussed today, and this is Northern Pass. Northern Pass is a huge deal up here, and a lot of people are concerned about the effects on our tourist industry and also the effect on real estate prices. So I wanted to know, wanted to have your guests talk about that, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Betsy, thanks a lot for raising it. And what do you think, Edith, you know, as the North Country looks at tourism, hoping that that will expand and replace some of the mill jobs? And she's right, the second home market is a big deal in the North Country as well. What are the concerns that you're hearing about the impact of Northern Pass on that sector?
Well, people who live in towns that would directly be affected are concerned. Some people are concerned about the idea of turning down an infusion of property tax dollars in towns that are already feeling the effect of losing mills. So it depends. There's the second home market is very important. Tourism is vital to the North Country. The Northern Pass people, I've gone to two of their three open houses. They're showing maps and displays on their computers that don't show the towers being as intrusive as people have worried about. So we're just going to have to see how that shakes out. It's very early on. My understanding is that we can expect the federal Department of Energy to start having hearings in September. And I think as, you know, the facts roll out and people are able to see the height of the towers that will be in their neighborhood, in their town, in the area, and the actual visual effect, we'll know a lot more as to how legitimate those concerns are and whether it really would affect the tourist business.
Well, and Betsy, thanks
a lot. It's been an awfully long time without a great deal of information until very recently. And it's allowed concern to build to enormous degree. I hope that now that we're moving into the next phase, beginning the permitting process, that we'll actually be able to deal with facts.
We, Betsy, are definitely working on this issue. As you know, we've been keeping an eye on it for a long time, and we're trying to plan a show for the weeks ahead. So thanks for the call, Betsy. Our number again is 1-800-892-6477. And let's go next to Phil calling from Bow. Hi, Phil. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Laura. Thank you for taking my call. I work remotely right now, so I could technically work wherever I could afford to live, and there's a good internet connection. And I know that the North Country doesn't have that robust internet infrastructure. That's good for, you know, it should be improved for a variety of reasons, some of them, you know, having to do with the education of the workers up there. They could take online classes if they couldn't attend the community colleges. But I wanted to emphasize that potentially the North Country could bill itself as a place where workers could go and work remotely, work online, and then enjoy living in the places up north and go to the shops and bring in income from the outside. It's happened enough in western Montana that it's actually changing the political demographics there, that there are lots of people from the San Francisco Bay Area moving into to the mountains. So
yeah.
I wondered what your guests thought of that.
And some of the native people there aren't so thrilled about that, but that's another story, isn't it, Phil?
Fair enough, yes.
And, you know, Erica, you looked at this, and that's been a storyline for a long time, that internet access isn't great in the North Country. But my sense from reading your reports is it's mostly doing pretty well now, but why don't you fill
us
in?
That actually is about to change in a big way, the internet access. The University of New Hampshire recently is in the process of a $66 million grant for something called middle mile fiber, which is basically fiber that will connect in the North Country to towers and antennas on people's houses. That will add 320 miles of fiber into the North Country, which will drastically change the situation there. So that actually will about change. That build out's happening now. It should be done by December, and that will allow people in the North Country to access broadband, maybe not the way we do, directly through their house, but that you will get broadband connected via towers and antennas, and that will drastically open up opportunities.
Thanks a lot for the call, Phil. It's a good point. And here's an email from Lauren, who says, I'm a young person in the North Country. While I'm in Grafton County, I've made my career and started my family in northern New Hampshire. I'm the executive director of the Littleton Area Chamber of Commerce and interact daily with both business owners and community members finding their way in these times. The quality of life is what has encouraged me to stay, and while we're often referred to as a sleepy region, there is so much to do, Lauren says. I think that smart marketing can really bring more skilled people my age, 20 to 40. And Lauren, good to hear from you. And, you know, Edith Tucker, Erica talked a moment ago about Littleton and the advantages it has, in addition to its location, you know, just a real community spirit. But when you talk about the North Country, Edith, location matters, doesn't it? I mean, there are pockets that are doing great, like Littleton, and there are other pockets that are really struggling.
Yes, and getting back to the whole topic of broadband, high-speed internet access, I live in Randolph, which is a town of about 300 people, and we have Time Warner down my street. I have superior connection, and most of Berlin-Gorham does. It's more in the last mile of more remote sections. But it is improving, and there is this big new push on from UNH. But there are plenty of places now if you wanted to work remotely. It's the other assets that people are unaware of. The tremendous interest in the arts community, an organized effort to let us all know about what's happening in the different sections of the county and into the Littleton-Grafton area. It's made a big difference. So some of the kinds of sacrifices that people used to have to live in northern New Hampshire, you really, if you plan your life, you can certainly go to plenty of concerts, both with classical music, blues, you know, all kinds of folk music, a lot of step dancing and bluegrass music, that kind of thing. So I think part of it is a marketing issue where we haven't been able to explain to people those positive changes that have been made.
Well, and Erica's article is definitely a big step in that direction. So I want to thank both of you very much for joining us. Edith, it's always nice to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Edith Tucker, reporter for the Coos County Democrat and the Berlin Reporter, both owned by Salmon Press. And Erica Cohen, it was good to meet you. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Erica Cohen, associate editor at Business NH Magazine. Again, the author of a two-part series this summer called The North Country, Tearing Away from Its Paper Past. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. This week, our engineer is David Darman. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our intern is Faith Meixel and Catherine Muzzy. Our volunteers are Priscilla Malcolm and John Barrett. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. The Exeter hospital worker charged with infecting patients with hepatitis C pleads guilty in federal court. Senate President Peter Bragdon takes a high-profile job while keeping his leadership post. And a fatal shooting at a YWCA raises questions about parental rights and security. We'll cover the big stories of the week. Email us at nhpr.org and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
This is NHPR. It's 9:59. The Diane Rehm Show is coming up next at 10 o'clock. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and from the law firm of Donahue, Tucker, and Chandela, offering legal representation to New Hampshire businesses, individuals, and municipalities, online at dtclawyers.com. And the Music Hall of Portsmouth, presenting the latest project from Woody Allen, Blue Jasmine, beginning August 23rd and running through September 12th. Tickets at themusichall.org.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord, 89.1.
WEVS Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN Keene, 90.7.
WEVC Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
AMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. Egyptian military forces stormed protest camps in a violent crackdown on supporters of deposed President Mohamed Morsi. Hundreds were killed in Cairo and elsewhere, thousands more injured. The interim government declared a month-long state of emergency.